Hey, this is John Fratelli. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cruel and tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, everybody, and welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans, the podcast that brings you pleasure.
And pain. And mostly the second thing.
Yeah. But everybody, welcome on back to the show. If you are a new listener, you're tuning in, you might be hearing us on various different platforms, but if you're tuning in for the first time, the show is called Verbal Shenanigans, and we simply we bring a guest on every week. We play silly games, have so funny banter, and that's kind of the show. I'm Scott. That's Mike there. Mike, how are you?
We're doing well, Scotty. Yourself?
Frozen. It is unbelievably cold today in New Jersey. So much so that my shower is frozen.
Oh.
Yep. Mm. So I'm currently renting a place, and right now there's nothing coming out of the shower. So I actually went to the gym today, and I was like, you know what? Well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to shower the next day or so here, so I made sure I showered at the gym, which I'm not always the biggest fan of, but, you know.
It'd be great if a bunch of people just went in there literally just to shower. Like, you like pick up a 2-pound barbell like three times and be like, felt the burn. All right, shower time.
Yeah, that was good. That was enough. But yeah, usually I don't. Like, I'm a little skeptic of, like, gym showers especially, but this one was actually pretty clean. I gotta give it to him. It was not as gross as I thought it was. I even brought, like, shower, like, sandals, and I actually didn't even use them.
Hmm. So you don't usually do that on an often basis? You don't fall for the old athlete's foot thing?
No. I mean, we'll see in a few days if that was the right decision or not. But I usually don't shower at the gym. I usually shower when I get home. But, you know, this was what I'm really – like, I shower every morning. I can't do anything until I shower. So I'm pretty upset if this doesn't work by tomorrow morning. But I might be doing a sink shower, the old
I believe they call it the PR shower.
Oh, yeah.
Or is that with cologne? I forget.
I think that's with cologne. But I don't know. We'll have to ask Carlos Vera.
Yeah. I mean, if there's something to do with Puerto Rico, you just find one person who happens to be from there, and that would be the official answer for the entire country.
Well, isn't that what we kind of do in general? You know, like we ask.
Oh yeah, that's what always happens. And all when you're about to say kind of like a risque joke, you always turn to see if somebody's gay or Hispanic or black, and just be like,
or all of us.
Is that cool?
Or all of those things at the same time?
Yeah. Females, I mean, all that stuff, and you just turned them. Oh, that was cool, right? Guys, I got permission. It's all right. Let's pile it on.
So Mike, it's good to be back. We've been kind of fighting through, I guess, like a holiday schedule almost, or lots of reschedules, lots of interviews moved to weird times. In fact, the interview we'll have on this episode was scheduled at one part, then it's scheduled a different day, and you were doing, you know, you had to do that stupid thing we call work.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had it planned out where I was going to do a late lunch and do it from my car.
Yep.
And then it got moved to like another half an hour, and I'm like, my group is meeting with the new CEO at that time. That might be not the smartest thing to do.
Right.
Listen, CEO, when Psycho Sid calls, you say screw you to everybody else.
Well, we don't have Psycho Sid yet, guys. We are working on him, though. We are. In fact, I just talked to him prior to recording this episode, and he kind of blew me off. So we'll see if we actually do pull him aboard. But I guess before we really get cracking here, we always say promotion to the end, but I've been making a conscious effort to get some of this stuff out of the way up front. There's a couple new places you can hear us. So we mentioned it last week that we just joined the DCN podcast network, or the DCN Internet Radio.
Discovery County Network. Yep.
So you can check us out in there. And I have a little announcement that we, starting on February 15th, our show is also going to be featured on the Coming Right Up Network from Live 605 Media.
Nice.
Yes. So they're launching a new platform on February 15th, and they accepted our show. That's pretty much all I can tell you at the moment, but we are kind of working through that. So it's Live 605 Media, called the Coming Right Up Network, and I believe it's comingrightup.org will be on. So
the crew, CRU.
Yeah. Coming Right. So pretty cool. I think that is just another cool place to see the podcast. I think a lot of it is based, I think he said South Dakota or something like that. So we're really pushing out west now. We're pushing out west.
Woo! Doggies.
But we're very excited.
Let's do our weekly bid on cattle, Scott.
But we are very excited to be part of that. And also, we are a part of the BS Podcast Network, which we've been part of for a little while. And they just do a really tremendous job at helping us get our stuff out. So I feel like we never really get to – we haven't been good at giving them their due. So a couple places, new places for you guys can listen to us. And you could also obviously check us out on iTunes and Stitcher and whatever your favorite podcast player is. We are on that.
That was a good podcast, Scott. I'll talk to you later.
All right, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. No. But I don't know. So that's good news there. That's good news. So – I guess 2019 starts the way it always starts. The Patriots are going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of got a rhythm in this thing, Scotty. What was that? I saw a stat that Tom Brady has now gone to more Super Bowls than every team in the NFL except for his own team, the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I saw that too. I also saw there was the AFC East champions in the last since 2001 have only been four quarterbacks. So
wow, yeah.
And he's in whatever it is, 13 of them or whatever the hell it is. I don't know. It's a lot.
It was
nine.
It was,
is this his ninth Super Bowl trip?
This is his ninth Super Bowl trip. Yeah, he is 5-3 right now going into this one. If I believe that was his third AFC championship he went to in the last couple of years. Eight in a row, was it actually? Was his third win in a row, what I meant to say.
Okay, so these are the quarterbacks since 2001, the AFC championship. Okay, ready? 2001, Brady. 2002, yep. Rich Gannon. 2003, Brady. 2004, Brady. 2005, Roethlisberger. 2006, Manning. 2007, Brady. 2008, Roethlisberger. 2009, Manning. 2010, Roethlisberger. 2011, Brady. 2012, Flacco. 2013, Manning. And then 2014, Brady. 2015, Manning. 2016, Brady. 2017, Brady. 2018, Brady.
I mean, do you realize Peyton Manning could be a legend if New England never drafted him? If they just sat back and said, nah, or even if you recall the year they drafted him, he was their fourth quarterback, and they literally kept him on the roster and just didn't activate him the entire year because they said somebody else would pick him up.
Oh.
You.
Yeah. So we'll... She just brought a space heater over. We'll see if that melts any pipes. I don't think so, but, you know.
Worst case, when you take your shower tomorrow, bring a toaster in with you. Plug it in, heat up the pipes, and then take a nice warm shower.
Yeah, well, there's been days that I've thought about bringing a toaster in with me, but for different reasons, you know.
What are the reasons? Were you making shower toast?
Yeah, good. Scott Brennan shower toast.
Why use butter when you can use the moistness of a shower? Come on down to Berlew's Shower Toast Emporium.
Wash it down with a good old warm glass of snake milk.
That's what we're talking about. That's the real bread and breakfast of the world. Come on to Georgia.
Don't we have a snake milker scheduled on the show?
It's intended for February 25th.
Now, are you going to do the interview as both, you know, interesting, but also maybe like a job app, like interview?
I got to hear some stories to kind of, you know, feel out if that is my true career. It's kind of like when we talked to Randy Santel and he told us that food challenges aren't making money and selling old televisions as well wasn't making money. So I checked off two of them right off the bat.
Well, at least you got your backup plan of the VCR repair shop that you've been you've been hoarding money
to
start.
Make a comeback, believe me. Classics always do.
If vinyl came back, VHS is coming back. I'm putting all my coin into it.
Mm-hmm. Laserdisc, here they come.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. The good old Tom Brady. I didn't really want the Patriots to go, but he doesn't bother me at all anymore because it's just like every year he does this is more and more unbelievable. Every year I love people like, well, the Patriots aren't good that good this year. Meanwhile, it's always 11-5, 12-4, another division championship. Brady gets to the Super Bowl. Brady gets to the championship. It's unbelievable. Like, I just respect it at this point.
I mean, it's funny how we still try to think of who's the GOAT of all time in the NFL.
It's not even close.
And it's just like, who else has done this? He's 41 and he's still mastering the league. You know, I mean, I can always give some pieces to where if you want to make an argument, certain items. So you can say the AFC East has been atrocious for probably 90% of his career. You know, so he always has six cakewalk games. You can debate he's got one of the best coaches in the world where he'll literally be like, oh, if you piss me off, you're off the team because I will get a seventh stringer and we will win a Super Bowl with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can say whatever you want about the fact that they get home field and it's always 5 below and it's always a dome team or a California team showing up there. But in the end, I don't know how many times, it's more debated if he's the GOAT than, like, Michael Jordan versus LeBron James, almost.
I don't even understand. I have this idiot friend that literally tells me, like, he is such a Brady hater, it's unbelievable. And he's like, he comes up with any excuse in the world. He's like, well, what if Brady didn't have Belichick? I'm like, how can you ask a question like that? That doesn't make sense. Like, it's just, he has Belichick. Because they keep winning together. Yeah. Like, they're never going to be separated. That's like saying, like, well, what if Jordan didn't have, Pippen? You know, what if Jordan didn't have Phil? You know, it doesn't – so is Phil a terrible coach? Phil Jackson a terrible coach?
Yeah.
Was Jordan overrated because Phil was the – you know, it doesn't make any – there comes a point where you just got to be like, yeah, I don't care if you like the Patriots. But it's just like, yes – this is it. He is the greatest football player of all time, hands down. The guy literally might play till he's 50.
Yeah, if you want to debate who has the better skills, yeah, I can say they're quarterbacks with better arms,
sure.
Probably better percentages. I would probably say Tom Brady is the smartest quarterback of them all because they even show how he's checking. He looks at the defense. He checks off to hand off to go to the other side to. He always seems to work it out, but, I mean, to just be like, nah, he can't be the greatest. It's like, how many times has he got to show up there for you to shut up? I mean, the equivalent I could say is, like, when I was younger, I hated Lawrence Taylor like nobody's business.
Right.
But at the same time, I never sat back and said, well, he sucks. It's like, I hate him because he's on my least favorite team and he's kicking our ass.
Yeah, like, I know, like, it's pretty much like the cool thing to hate the Patriots. I really don't. Like, and what amazes me is like they do it with average guys and they turn them into amazing players. Like, You know, like Brady's had Moss. That was probably the best receiver he ever had. Okay, mm-hmm. you're gonna throw Montana in there, and he had Jerry Rice. Like I don't even know the comparison. This guy makes Edelman look like the greatest receiver ever. He spreads the ball to 15 different guys every game. You know, there's no point in arguing it at this point. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, oh well. And he's doing it in the free agency era, so no one ever can stay. you know?
They lose people all the time because, you know, Belichick is a sergeant and people don't like it. Oh, I don't like this. I'm going to go over there. Never win when they go to the new places. Somebody speaks up. I forget the guy's name. I remember a couple years back, like, Belichick put in this, like, third-string running back on a Monday Night Football game.
Yep.
And, like, just to throw the other team off, and the guy ran for like 170 yards. It was something great, like 170 yards, three touchdowns.
Yep.
And then the guy didn't play the next three games, and like the press kept on talking. Why isn't blah blah in the game? He did so well, blah blah blah. And, you know, Belton. Oh, I'd put in there what needs to be put in there. That's what we do, and all that. And then he literally cut him because I think he was just sick of answering the questions. And they still go on and win. It's just phenomenal. I mean, I'll admit, like anybody else, going into the game, I always root for the Pirates. I was rooting for Kansas City.
Of course,
I was
rooting
for the LA Chargers before. When he went up against Manning, I rooted for Manning.
But it's just, I kind of almost like it now because in order to get there, you got to beat the best, and nobody can beat them. Nobody can get through them anymore. Just figures out a way every single time.
I think secretly Belichick wants to get rid of him and do it with somebody else just to prove to the world it's like it was me.
Yeah, maybe.
It's great, that's me and him, but even greater to say it was all me. Because that was the big hubbub about Garofalo. All the rumors I heard was he wanted to prime him to be the replacement of Brady, have another quarterback in there for 20 years and win umpteen Super Bowls. And Brady was like talking to Kraft, and Kraft is like, we can't do it. So he traded him out of spite.
Yep.
So
to me, it's almost more entertaining, like listening to the haters on Facebook. Like, it's always, oh, the Patriots get all the calls, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, guy, the Chiefs lined up a foot offsides and gave the game away. Like, was that the Patriots' fault? Like, It amazes me. Like, you got to, like, at some point, you got to step back and be like, well, this is the greatest team, possibly the greatest franchise in all of sports. This 20-year run.
Oh, yeah, it's insane. I mean, the only thing I could compare it to, what was it, UCLA won, like, a decade's worth of college basketball titles or something like that?
Yeah,
or,
something like that. I mean, you think of the normal. You think of the Yankees. You think of the Montreal Canadiens. You think of, like, the Lakers-Celtics kind of thing. You think of
UConn female women's basketball.
Right. But no one's done it in this era like this. And football is like, how does a team not rebuild ever? The Patriots have never rebuilt. They're always right there. It's just amazing. Yep. Every team has its natural flows, right? Like, even the Saints, right? Like, 3 years ago, they were terrible. They've been rebuilding to what they are now. I mean, it really is unbelievable. Like,
if you look at it, when Brady went down that week one, that 1 year, they still went 10-6 and almost made the playoffs. And Matt Cassel has been in the league ever since.
Nope.
Hasn't done a single thing since that year.
Nope. And I love when people are like, oh, the NFL fixes. Don't you think when 90%, let's say the NFL was in on this, right? And when 90% of like fans want the Patriots to lose and they want to see the Chiefs in there, don't you think they would be going the other way to get the fan involved? You'd think they want this to happen over and over again?
Okay.
I don't think
Goodell hates the Patriots. Flat out hates the Patriots.
Yep.
Why did he keep going after them for a year and a half to give a 4-game suspension for deflated balls?
Right.
Because he hates them. And what the second he got the suspension, I remember turning to somebody and say, they're going to win the Super Bowl. Nah, man, they're going to get struggle, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, there is zero possibility that spiteful team is going to allow that to happen and not force the guy to hand them a trophy at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's... It's fascinating. It's fascinating. At this point, like, you know, once the Giants are out, once the your team is out, right? Like, it's just you get to sit back and sometimes it'd be like, just watch something that you're never going to probably see again. You know what I mean? Like, when Jordan was playing, you're never going to see that guy again. You know, yeah, you'll see other incarnations of great basketball players, but there's one Michael Jordan. You know, there was one I don't know why it comes to my head, but there was one Greg Maddux of that pitching staff of the Atlanta Braves. You know what I mean? That amazing pitching staff. You know, sometimes you just got to be like, tip your hat and be like, it's just unbelievable how good they are.
I'm starting to think, wouldn't it be great if the league actually fixes games and they keep on screwing up and the Patriots keep winning and like Goodell just shows up on Monday morning? What the hell? How much to throw a flag there? I don't know, man. He's 42. I don't know what's going on out there.
I don't know. I even posted the other day. I know there's a bunch of things I'm supposed to hate, okay? Like, I'm supposed to hate the Patriots, right? Everyone hates the Patriots. I don't hate them. I'm supposed to hate Joe Buck. I don't hate Joe Buck. You know? I'm supposed to. A lot of people make fun of Dave Matthews Band. I like that. Like, people are very. I mean, I know this is a very bold statement. People are very gang mentality. They like to all think a certain way, and obviously you see that in the news and with the politics all the time. We'll get to that maybe after our guest. But it's just a lot of people don't like to think for themselves.
Well, people love the cliche. I mean, we had this conversation with right. Chris Barron of the Spin Doctors. How it's, I mean, he kind of laughed off how, you know, Two Princes is still a big song, but we also kind of talked about how it's like the better something gets, the more people kind of turn their face and just starts hating on it just for the sake of hating on it and all. They love to turn their back on the quote unquote punchline, if you will, where it's, you know, it's almost like the cliche joke of something like the Simpsons or the Big Bang Theory, something that goes on forever that people like. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to start hating on it because I'll be cool. And then other people will be like, yeah, that is cool to hate that. And,
yeah. Yeah. It's funny you said that. I was going to bring it up later, but I'll bring it up now. Like, that whole hate, like, me and another very successful comic, not like me, were talking the other day, and this guy we know that is very, very negative. Always everything on Facebook is him doing a review on something, and it's always negative reviews. And the guy like puts up like, let's see how long I'll make it through the Sebastian Maniscalco special, and I've seen him do it like 5-6 times with a bunch of other comics. And it's just like, dude, you're a comic. This is what you want publicly broadcasted? Like, do you know what a guy like Sebastian Maniscalco has done to get to where he is? How hard he's worked? To say, like, oh, I lasted 8 minutes into the special. Listen, if it's not for you, that's fine. But publicly, like, blasting it, just be like, oh, he's not that funny. He's not that funny? Well, maybe you don't find him funny, but that guy has figured out how to make millions of people come to his shows every day, every weekend. So to say, oh, he's not funny, he's overrated. Obviously, the whole goal in this, right, to do comedy or to do music is to kind of figure it out, right, and find a way to have fans, and that guy gets it. And you're an open mic comic that gets booked every once in a while like I do, and you're publicly blasting like comedy special, like going into them saying like, oh, let's see how long I can last. Like, you're doing 10 minutes at the bar in New York City where there's 6 people watching you. And I don't know. I just think it's a bad move, man. Bad. People love to hate.
Yeah. But that was an underground, amazing 10, like, you know, the word's going to spread from that bar show. It's like, oh, this right. guy's nothing like Sebastian. You got to check him out. And it's just going to flow out there like it's nothing. You know, it's going to be a virus, Scott. He's going to be the next thing. You got to see what the future's like, man.
Just to have the ball. Like, I would give my I would give my right big toe to have a Netflix special. We all would in this business. Or a musician would have for to play a big tour or something like that. How hard that work is and how much work it takes to get to that point and to get recognized. So to just like dismiss it before you even watch and try to get like the hate bandwagon with you is just so weird to me, man. I think it's just such a bad move.
Well, it happens all the time with comedy. If I bring up Carrot Top, the first thing is to make a joke. Oh, that crazy comedian. I'm like, he is selling out in Las Vegas. That guy has been making money for God knows when, and he's doing something that nobody else is doing.
Yeah.
You laugh at his prop comedy. He how long has it been? 20, 25 years, something like that? Just making money.
Yeah.
Larry the Cable Guy. It's the easiest joke on the planet. I mean, like, oh, he's doing those stupid Southern jokes or whatever. No, he's making buku bucks. He is selling out. He's doing stuff with Disney. And I would kill for that.
And just to put a dismissive statement out there, like, oh, let's see how long I can let. Like, you're just completely ignoring that the guy has something or has done something, has figured something out that you obviously have not. You know, like, I get it. You can be critical, like, but just to post things online, it's just very. Those kind of things make me like just want to delete all my social media sometimes, or just block people and like just put up what I want to put up. I don't know. It's just the hate is just it's gotten so bad. And you're part of a community now. No, let's say, you know, God forbid, you know, God willing, maybe this guy he gets a big break and suddenly is open for one of these comics that he ripped apart. You know, like. And that's not far off because big comics do these specials, but they're still doing the local gigs and the guy needs a host or an MC. And, you know, like, and then they look back at this guy's post like, oh, I hated that. But it's like, you would give your left nut to be anywhere near what this person's doing. You know?
Yeah. You want to show some balls. Why don't you, like you said, like, oh, I hate Sebastian and all. Try to get Sebastian to book you and then tell him to his face, no.
Exactly.
You're not a real comedian.
Yeah, me and Joe Fernandez were talking too. I was saying, you know, like, it doesn't take balls to go after a huge comedian. Do it to one of your colleagues that you see every day at the mics and tell him he's no good. Let's see how tough you are. You know, like, do you like their comedy? Like, I don't know. It makes me very mad.
You got to support the local scene, man.
You don't have to hate everything, and if you don't like something, what's the old rule your mom used to tell you? Like, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all, you know? Like, especially in a public forum, it's just like, hey, hate mongers, join me in hating this thing, and let's hate together and be a hate team, and we, you know, we're so much cooler and more highbrow than that. But yet this guy is just did 4 sold-out Madison Square Garden shows, and to be dismiss him just like, you know, I don't get it. I'm above. It's like when someone listens to a band and like someone like, oh, I knew about them before they got big. It's like, oh, cool. So that means no one should like them after you.
Yeah. You weren't there when they were doing the mic checks. You don't know their good stuff, man. When he goes check 1, 2, the place goes nuts. Unlike that commercial song he put out there for the new Disney movie.
Right. And isn't that like, isn't it funny? Like, you want to like a band, you love them, support them so much, and then the minute they get big or something like that, they're too big for you. Like, you want them just for yourself. I don't know.
I kind of remember when I was growing up, how somebody mocked me for liking Green Day and saying they're no Sonic Youth.
Oh.
I'm fairly confident Sonic Youth wishes they had Green Day money right now.
And not only that, like, those are two totally different types of music. Like, comparing those two bands is very, very strange. But I'm gonna use let's get to the guest. And we'll get back to some of the stuff afterwards. Guest today, like I said, Berlew was not able to be part of this interview. He was doing his whole work thing, gotta make money to make a living thing.
Don't hate on the work.
But a very, very cool interview. I got to sit down with John Fratelli of the band Fratellis, and he's also putting out a solo album coming out very soon. And he, Very, very cool guy. We got to. He is from Scotland, so I'm not sure if we ever did a Scotland interview, Berlo. I think we might check that off the list. But you might know his song "Chelsea Dagger," the Fratellis. They played at Blackhawks games, and very successful band over the years. And really got to sit down with him, talk about his writing process and the band and his solo career and his touring life. So it was just a good interview. So. With that, enjoy the interview with John Fratelli. Hello.
Hey, is that Scott?
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Sorry about that. This, the exact same thing is happening again. So I can hear the phone ring, but the screen won't let me swipe to answer. So.
Well, what are you going to do?
we've worked out now.
We've got you. We've got you loud and clear right now. So,
great.
All is well. John, first off, thanks for giving us a few minutes on the show here. Where are we calling you at? Are you in England? Are you in Scotland? Where are you at right now?
Yeah, I'm at home in Glasgow. We finished touring for the year just before Christmas Eve, actually. We're at home now for quite a while.
Now, are you always a guy that comes back to Scotland, or do you kind of stay all over the place?
I mean, most of the time I'm here. I have friends out in the US. Over on the East Coast and West Coast, and I'll visit them. You know, like this year's quite quiet for us, so I have time to go and visit people. But most of the time, I'm in Glasgow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so interesting when you talk to European musicians. It's so much easier to, you know, you can move to another country, but it's the equivalent of like you driving a couple states over where we are. You know, so people, it's interesting. Sometimes they relocate. Sometimes, you know, you might say, oh, I'm living in France, but it's only a 2 or 3 hour ride or whatnot. So it's pretty interesting.
I figure like I could have left Glasgow like any time in the last 12 years. And the fact that I haven't must mean that, you know, it has something going for it. You know, I can't tell you what that is. I just know that if I didn't enjoy living here, then no, I wouldn't be here.
Right, right. Now you grew up there. What was your music background? Were you a kid who picked up a guitar and started a punk band? Were you a classically trained musician? Were you a piano player? Where did you get your start?
My folks sent me for piano lessons. I think I wanted to go. Well, what I really wanted was, like, could we just get a piano? Like, I just wanted a piano for some reason. So my folks bought a piano on the understanding that, okay, but you have to go to lessons. I guess I would have been about, I don't know, maybe 10.
Okay.
But I hated the lessons. I hated being taught anything ever, you know. And nothing much has changed. And when I stopped getting lessons, that's when I started to enjoy playing piano. And then probably around about 16, 17, I started playing guitar, you know. But I wasn't a natural, you know, and I'm still not a natural. But I really struggled to play the damn thing. And why I kept playing it, I have no real idea, because I was particularly bad at it at first. You know, and everybody else around me that I knew who played guitars, they were way better. Right. I was always way behind. So I had no business to keep playing the damn thing, but I for some reason, I kept just, you know, I couldn't put it down. And from there, you know, you keep plugging away at it, and you get a little better each time. But I was never prodigious, at anything.
Now, what kind of kid were you? Were you a kid who was very open to performing and being out there, or were you more of the introverted, shy type that, you know, wasn't really showing off their musical skill until later in life?
It's hard to say, because other people are far better at telling stories about us than we are ourselves, aren't they? You know,
right.
It I tended, and I still do, to spend a lot of time on my own. The whole music thing was just one of those things where you have to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things where, I mean, I remember the very first time playing on a stage with a band. It was probably, you know, like a high school, the high school dance. You know, and we could barely play. I must have known four chords.
That's the way all high school bands are.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But they're great.
Two of those chords I was playing wrong, you know.
Yeah, totally.
But you just wanted to go up there and you know, make this awful racket, you know. And who knows why? You just have to do it. And really nothing much has changed, you know. It's really the same,
right.
The exact same thing that compelled me at 17 is the same thing that compels me now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, you know, over the last week, knowing that the interview is coming up, kind of delving into, you know, the Fratelli's albums and then also listening to a little bit of solo stuff. And, you know, you get a wide variety of, you know, you get some punk in there, some pop in there, and even some folk here and there. Where did you, like, early on, did you have a goal of what type of music you were going for? Or are you more the guy that whatever's going to come out of guitar, that's what we're going to go for?
Yeah, it's definitely that. And that's why, especially with the Fratellis, that's why as the records have gone on, they've changed.
Yes.
Because, you know, and a lot of that's to do with, you know, having a short attention span, I guess. but really it comes down to, on a kind of day-to-day basis, I mean, all I do with my time is, you know, apart from sort of lying around and not doing very much, the only other thing I do is to play music.
Right.
And really day-to-day when I sort of sit down and play most days, it's really all about just doing something that keeps me entertained, you know. Mm. That's really all it's about. And the thing is, that changes from day to day.
Right.
And when you start to, you know, when you start to go on a certain thread, you're gone, you know, you're going in that direction. Because that's absolutely the most interesting place you can go on that day. And to me, that seems like it's been something that's been quite consistent.
Right, right. So tell us about the Fratellis. You, you know, looking it up, it says, I wanted to ask you, it says that you advertised on yourself under a different name to tell your bandmates that you were seeking a new band. Is that true?
Oh, that wasn't me. That was Mince, our drummer.
Yeah. Oh.
we all found each other through, like, ads.
Right.
We were on, like, a music shop. We had a board musicians wanted. So Barry found my advert. And then I saw the advert was for a guitar player called Graham.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, okay, so I called this Graham. And a sort of very gruff voice answered the phone. And it turns out it was his dad. And he said, no, there's no Graham here. And then he hung up on me. So I checked the number again and I thought, I definitely dialed the right number. So I tried again. And, you know, the same thing. There's no Graham here, but there's a Gordon. I was like, Gordon, okay, let me speak to Gordon just in case.
Right.
And Gordon comes on the phone and says, oh, I'm not Gordon, I'm Mince. And by that point, I'm completely confused. You know, this guy's got three names. So he joined us as a guitarist. And then it turns out, without telling us, he was actually this, you know, crazy good drummer. You know, the rest took care of itself.
Yeah, so when did you, the Fratellis have, you know, they've been around a good chunk of time now, if you look back around the 05 time, and, you know, you guys have still done stuff, you know, here and there, taking breaks and whatnot. When did you realize that, you know, maybe you guys had something there, and when did you start noticing, okay, we're getting some crowds, we're getting some momentum, where that you could do just the Fratellis, you could do just music? When did that really kind of become a realization?
The very first time we got in a rehearsal room together.
Really?
And we would only book 3 hours at a time, you know, because that's all we could afford. And the very first night that all three of us got in and played together, you know, within the first hour, it was completely obvious, you know, that this was going to work. It just never seemed like, from that first rehearsal, it just seemed ridiculous that it wouldn't work. It just didn't. It seemed completely unbelievable that it wouldn't work. And that wasn't, you know, it wasn't arrogance. It wasn't that at all. It just seemed that the three people who were playing together just that it clicked and that it worked.
Right.
And that it had something. You know, we'd all been in other bands before. You know, but we all say the same thing. There was something about that first day that was completely unlike any of the other things that we've been involved in, you know. So we really did know from that first day, you know, you don't know where it's going to go. You don't know where it's going to take you, but you know that it's going to work.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have success, and you start touring. Not only, you know, Europe used to be known for the big festivals, which obviously they still are, but then, you know, America, certainly over the last decade or so, has really caught on, and you know, every time I look on the internet at bands I like, they're playing some amazing festival with 20 bands. Some I remember from the past, some that I would never imagine getting together. The festival environment is just getting, you know, it just seems to be expanding rather than going away at all. And you've played Coachella. And things like, are you a fan of playing giant festivals, or are you more of a small club kind of guy, or do you love both aspects of that? Which I'm assuming you're gonna say both, but some guys are more one than the other.
It's not necessarily about, for me at least, it's not necessarily about, you know, festival versus theater versus club versus arena. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have bad and good shows anywhere, you know. And we played enough of those big festivals to know that, you know, they don't, you know, even though it's this sort of royal occasion, they don't guarantee a good show. I'm really all about the show. I don't mind where we get it, but when you get those nights, they're so magical that you couldn't care less where they are. You know, I mean, I still maintain that no matter how many prestigious shows that we've done, my favorite show of ours is still the very first show we played, you know, which was probably to about 50 people in this cramped little sweaty basement of a bar in Glasgow. You know, to me, that's still my favorite show. You know, there's a level of excitement, you know, that's, you know, you can feel it everywhere.
Right.
It's really electric. And we still get that from time to time, but it's never dependent on the venue or, you know, there's just something that happens on certain nights. And I don't even want to know what it is. I mean, there is no word for it. But if there was a word for it, I wouldn't want to know what the word was, because it would, you know, I like the fact that it's that little bit of magic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I played in bands growing up and in college and after college and whatnot, and, you know, the small bar gigs were always a blast. And, you know, even I could relate it now doing stand-up for whatever, it's, you know, 6-7 years and whatnot. A good show for a crowd of 20 people that's into it can be just as good as a crowd of 300 people who are, you know, not into it. So I kind of can compare it to that and kind of relate to you, you know.
Completely.
What was it like opening for the Police?
I mean, kind of odd.
Really?
I mean, well, all of a sudden, you know, we thought we were doing okay because we were playing, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 capacity theaters and you know, we really we were doing okay, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And then all of a sudden you find yourself on stage, you know, at Giant Stadium or whichever stadium, and you're suddenly like, oh God, this is a whole different thing, you know.
Yeah.
It, Honestly, I can't remember. It was right in the middle of a period where we've been constantly touring for about 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd only just started to playing in America at that point.
Right.
I remember just being kind of tired.
Right.
In general. So it's really all a bit of a haze. I mean, all I can say is, you know, the three guys and the police couldn't have been nicer, you know, to us.
Yeah.
But the shows, it's all a bit of a dream now.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that leads into the question. What type of guy are you on the road? Are you a, you know, like, how do you occupy your time on the road? Are you out often, or are you kind of a homebody? What do you do on the road?
Yeah, it's changed over the years. Now, just personally, I tour in a very different way than I used to.
Right.
Because I just, you know, I could stay up all night when I was in my sort of mid to late 20s and still be able to play show after show. Now I can't do that. You know, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing is, I don't know if this is necessarily an age thing, but it might be where you become far more, it becomes kind of a big deal to make sure that every show you play, because people have bought tickets,
yep,
that you're able to give everybody what they deserve when they paid money for a ticket, you know. So, you know, I'm first to bed, and I generally spend most of my time on tour on my own. Mm. You know, that's just my way of doing it. It's not antisocial.
Right.
You know, everybody around me knows the score by this point. You know, so nobody would ever take it personally. But it's kind of like I'm storing every sort of ounce of enthusiasm for each show, you know. And then after the show, I'm kind of, it's gone till the next night.
Right. So let's talk about your writing process. You have the album coming out on the 19th.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, 15th, on February 15th. So your solo album. Now, how does your writing, write everything at home, bring in rough recordings, bring it to the studio kind of guy? Are you a create in the studio kind of guy? Are you a bounce ideas off the rest of the band? You know, we've had so many cool musicians on this show, and it's one of my favorite things to talk to people about is their writing style. How do you usually go about it?
Mine has been pretty consistent since my early 20s, where probably for two reasons, I do quite intricate demos, and there's probably two reasons for that. One is that I find that the best way to really get my teeth into the song. I can't remember the last time I sort of sat down and wrote a song from beginning to end,
mm-hmm.
Just on a guitar. You know, like it's not. I probably used to do it when I was a lot younger, but it's not something I do anymore.
Right.
I really feel like doing those quite detailed demos is my way of just understanding what type of song it is. But the other reason is, if I've come up with an idea that excites me, I let's say we booked in to record an album,
mm-hmm.
8 months from now, I don't want to wait 8 months to hear what this song might be like.
Yep.
Like, I'm far too excited about it. Like, I want to hear it that day, and by the end of that day, there'll be a fairly detailed version that it'll change by the time we record it, but those demos really, they're quite a definite blueprint of how the song's going to be.
Yes.
And I've worked that way for quite a long time now, you know, and it isn't something that's become stale. You know, sometimes people feel like they have to change up how they work.
Yep. I mean, you got bands that go into the studio, they try a different recording method every single album. You know.
Yeah, and that, you know, I have no issue with that. Like, if of that course, works yeah. for them, that's great. The way that I work, if it does start to become sort of tedious and predictable, then I'll know, you know, because that excitement won't be there. And then I'll know it's time to try something else. But that hasn't really happened yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like you're still surely cranking out plenty of music as far as the release. Let's talk about the new release. We got Bright Night Flowers coming out on the 15th, and this is a solo album, and is, like I said, coming out on Cooking Vinyl. Tell us about the album. What is, you know, is this songs from the past? Is this all new material? What do we got to look forward to on this album?
Well, it's kind of a solo record by accident. You know, like, it's not like I set out to say, do you know what, I really need to make a solo record. It wasn't that at all. When I was writing songs for the last Fratelli's record, I suddenly found myself, they were a particular style, and I was really sort of engrossed in this particular style that we needed for that Fratelli's record. Mm-hmm. Because I was sort of playing around with things but keeping them within that style, I really felt the need to take a break from it every few days. And then taking a break for me, you know, I can't help but go back and sit at an instrument and sort of fiddle around. So I would sort of take myself off to the piano and play around, and before I knew it, there was four or five songs that wouldn't fit the record the band was about to make, but I really liked them.
Yep.
And you know, they had a feel to them that really came. It's the kind of thing that comes easy to me. And then those four or five songs, I realized they would also fit a bunch of other songs that I had written maybe 5-6 years ago. And before I knew it, you know, I realized that there was a whole album's worth of material that finally fitted, those songs all fitted each other. And really, I was just too curious not to just, you know, record the whole thing as a record. And, you know, I really just wanted to hear them. I just wanted to do that whole process and sit down and listen to it to see if I was right, that it worked or not, you know. So really, that's why I say it was an accident. It wasn't about, you know, I've got to make a record on my own. I just wanted to hear those songs finished. Yeah. And then from there, you know, you let slip to your manager that you have this record, and then before you know it, you know, it's being released. But the whole reason for doing it was purely because I was curious.
So this is songs that have stemmed from since 2012, correct? And you re-recorded some of them?
Yeah, exactly. There's maybe 9 songs on the record, and mm-hmm. I think 3 of them were from that period, 2012, and the rest were written sometime last year.
Yeah. And I will recommend to anybody listening, you just released Evangeline, right? That's how I pronounce it, correct? That's the one I've been playing the last couple of days, really, really enjoying that song. So kudos to you on that
one. Oh, I'm glad. Thank you.
So just a couple things before we go here. I got to ask you about Chelsea Dagger. You're responsible for writing one of the catchiest songs in the history of songwriting. It is a song that, you know, I'll catch my fiance humming it. She's a big fan of the Fratellis. I catch her humming it while cleaning the house. I've heard the song in video games before. It's even gone as far as, I know, the Chicago Blackhawks use it as their goal song. How do you feel about that? Like, do you still have like mass love for the song, or is it a little weird to hear your song in all different places? I mean, obviously you got to have some love for it, but what was the process of that, and how are you feel towards that song today?
It's not something that crosses my mind very often.
No.
If ever. The honest answer is the only songs I'm interested in are the ones I haven't written yet. You know,
gotcha.
It's the next song and the next song and the next song.
Right.
And that's not maybe in, you know, evasive. That's just, you know, even with songs that I've really liked, you know, I like them for 2 minutes and then, you know,
I'm
kind of disinterested in them after that.
Mm-hmm.
As to why that song in particular sort of took off, I have absolutely no idea. You know,
I'll tell you, it works perfectly when the goal is scored and the whole arena goes. It's a perfect goal song for the Blackhawks there.
Yeah, I mean, but I why that particular song? God, who knows? It's helpful.
Yeah, you know,
in certain ways, it's helpful. But honestly, like it's not a sexy answer, but
yeah, well,
it's just I'm so focused on, you know, what am I going to do next, because that's where the excitement is, you know.
Well, you're very humble about it. It's an awesome song, and I'm glad it took off for you. I always like to ask bands and musicians now that things have obviously changed so much in the digital age. As far as streaming and both like social media and being able to connect with fans and whatnot, where it seems less about album sales and more about touring and getting your music out there. Now, how have you surely seen a benefit from the streaming, and have you also seen a negative side to maybe having to tour more or play more to make a living at this? Where do you stand on that?
I don't think we or anybody else has to tour more to make money out of this.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I mean, people have been, you know, doing crazy, you know, 2 year world tours for the last 40 or 50 years.
Right.
You know, but it's definitely true that, you know, unless you're selling. It seems like if you're right at the very top, it's only the people at the very, very top that seem to be able to sell enough records where, you know, if they wanted to, they wouldn't have to go out and play live.
Yeah.
You know, they would still make more than enough from just selling records. And then it seems like really everybody else, isn't in that position, you know, so it's definitely true that really the place where you make money from music these days is to go out and play live.
Yep.
But, you know, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. You know, it's a bad thing if you don't like doing that, you know, and it's really not such a bad thing if you do enjoy doing that, you know. But that's just, there's really no point at this, you know, at this point there's no good reason to argue with it.
Right.
Because that's the way it's gone, and you know, there's reasons for it, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
We all know the reasons for it. But at the same time, like, you know, my son has Apple Music, and, you know, until he got it, I had no idea of, okay, so you can get any song you want at any point.
It's amazing,
in the day,
right?
You want, you know, for like £10 a month. And man, that thing is great.
I know.
It's kind of hard to argue with the whole thing because I use it.
I use Spotify, you know, every day. Every day I'm discovering something new or playing something old. The other day we were talking about how driving around with the CD booklet and, you know, always having to change.
I hated that. Like the whole, like I love the, you know, having books, you know, on the Kindle.
Yep.
I love having music all on the one device and not having to worry about, you know, putting everything back in the right case. Like, it really suits me because I'm just lazy in that way. but yeah, the flip side is, you know, people make less money on it. But,
yep.
You know, probably the last thing to say about that, and, you know, I think I was having this conversation the other day with somebody, is that, you know, nobody forces us to make music. You know, nobody forces us to do this.
No.
We don't have to do this. You know, we're doing it because, you know, if you're doing it for the right reason, then you're doing it because that's the thing you love more than anything else.
Yeah.
And in that case, you know, nobody's sort of frog marched in with a rifle at our backs, you know. So we really have no good reason to whine about it, because, you know, we're doing this because we've chosen to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it all because of, you know, emailing and reaching out and things like that. That is, you know, also the reason I'm able to talk to you right now, to talk to you somewhere across the ocean, you know, and connect with artists that I've been interested in, or artists that just have an interesting story. So I personally love it because it has opened this whole world of being able to talk to people I would have never met or even, you know, shared words with before. So it's all positive to me.
Me too.
So, John, first off, I want to thank you so much for coming on, man. Really cool conversation. If people want to check you out, and where should they go, and what should they look forward to coming up with you? Mm-hmm. I know the new album. I don't know if you're touring with support, and how's it going?
I guess the easiest place for me to remember is just my website, because I can't remember all the other sort of platforms, which I'm pretty sure is just John Fratelli. Is it really just johnfratelli.co.uk possibly? I'm sure it's easy to find. Like,
so we Google
even though
for
I use it. All that. Exactly, because I would just Google it anyway. this album comes out next month, and I play some shows in the UK, but then we're making the next Fratelli's record in April. So
awesome.
There's kind of no time to lose.
And you guys coming? You guys going to tour the States with that one, or are you?
We have every with the last 3 or 4 records.
No, so too early to tell. So,
but I would be surprised if we didn't. Yeah.
Awesome, John. Thanks so much, man, and good luck with the solo album. Good luck recording the new album, and just keep making music, man. It's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks,
John Fratelli. Very cool. I really love picking the brain of a musician or an actor or writer. Similar, like a couple of weeks ago, we had the author on from Seinfeldia. You know, she was very. I love picking her brain about her writing process, Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong, and how she very organized and kind of had chapters planned out and mapped out. And I love talking to comics about how they write. Some guys are writers on stage. Some guys are. You know, writer's notebook, you know, pen to notepad. Some are, you know, word for word. Others are just go up there with bullet points and talk it out. And the same thing with musicians, man. Like when I was in a band, it was always, I was a work it out with the band kind of guy. Maybe bring an idea or a bass line or a chorus and work it out with the band and figure out where it goes. Other guys are able to, I'm always amazed by guys who are able to write complete songs and come in with this finished product, and it's really amazing. And John Fratelli, really cool to talk to. So go check out his album, Bright Night Flowers. All right. Yeah, that was, this is a good interview, man. He's,
I missed my voice in it, but yeah, it was all right.
I should take the interview and like, edit in your voice from other interviews.
You should make it like controversial, where like I keep asking him questions and he won't answer them, and then you ask a question. Well, yeah, Scott, that's a great question. Thank you.
So what was it like being on Always Sunny in Philadelphia? Like, make it look like you. You're asking to know nothing about him. You're asking questions that he's not part of.
So, have you ever owned a trapeze?
Trapeze?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, have you ever been like an artist or something like that? It says here you're an artist, so I figure you're a trapeze artist.
Do you mean trapeze?
Yeah.
Oh.
English is only my first language. So.
A trapeze is where prostitutes swing from swing from.
See, I'm bringing back the circus guy. Yeah. I know how to bring the crowds in.
Mike Berlow, snake milk and shower toast and the trapeze artists. Berlow, I just got an email as I was checking my email. Why? We were doing this Buddy, the podcast has officially been on the air for 5 years. Ooh. As of today.
Wow.
5 years. 5 years. Hard to believe. And I only did it for like maybe at most a year before you came.
Something like that.
So we've been doing this for at least 4 years. So congratulations, easily. Buddy. We're halfway to a decade.
Oh, man.
And we
so many accomplishments.
We're halfway to a decade, and we're looking forward to interviewing a snake milker.
that's once that happens, I'm like, Scott, dropping the mic.
Yeah, ow. I think it's
no
time. It's time
once
to go.
Once you snake milk, you don't do anything else.
So I found this interesting thing online. It was an article posted from 1958. And it was a an article, 129 ways to get a husband in 1958. I thought maybe we'd read through some of these because it's pretty amusing. Berlew, like, you know, maybe we should read this to you know your wife and maybe my fiance and see if they followed these rules. 50 years later, no, 60 years later. So let's go through some of these. I'm not going to read all 129 because that would be ridiculous.
That's the podcast you asked for, ladies and gentlemen. When we get a list, every single thing gets read off. We don't miss a beat.
So the first category is where to find him. Where do you find that guy, that husband? Okay. So number one is you should get a dog and walk it. Now, Berlew, in that case, it would have worked with you.
Oh, there's no doubt. I would have done anything, any kind of weird sex things, and I'll just meet animals and stuff like that. So,
yeah, so like Berlew has this thing where, you know, I don't know, maybe it subsided a little bit since you got your dog. You know, like now that you have your own dog to pet it a little bit.
No. we walked into a Petco today. I turned to the left. I'm like, dog, and we walked over. Barely said a word to the other people.
Berlew has this thing where he sees a dog, he basically makes a beeline over to pet it. Whether you want him to pet it or not, he's going towards it. We've been to breweries where dogs are allowed, and all of a sudden I look to the left, and I don't know where he is, and I look, and he's like in a family, in a family with their dog, like just chumming it up, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have worked with you. Maybe they were right.
Yes.
Okay.
You forgot our famous story where I went past a IndyCar driver.
Yes.
Just to scratch his dog.
Yes, yes. And then you asked the IndyCar driver if he was a good boy.
Well, you know, I mean, we're bringing it back, you know, we're going full circle in our interviews.
Yeah. So next, have your car break down at strategic places. So, you know, you're looking for a husband. Maybe you have a breakdown at the old the Giants game. You have your car breakdown,
yeah.
You know.
Put a little sugar in the tank. I mean, I'm sure it'll fix it.
I like this. Attend night school. Take courses that men like.
How'd you meet your husband? He was really stupid. He needed a GPA.
Yeah, like, what does that mean? Like, you're going to attend, like, woodshop course and, you know, like, just be there just looking on the prowl for a husband.
Exactly.
Join a hiking club.
That would work today. Yeah. That would work today.
Yeah, look in the scent. Now, how creepy is this? So let's say you're very down in your luck and you just want to be married. Look in the census reports for places with the most single men. Nevada has 125 males for every 100 females. Can you imagine you're so single, as if that's like a verb, like a adjective. You're so single that you're looking at the percentages that you can meet your husband. Like, wow, you know, like if I move to Boise, Idaho, there is X amount of men there per female. So the competition is less.
Once I find out that government report, man, I'm going to get me a man. Woo!
You are a creep if you take out census reports to try to get a date. I feel like a certain comic we know may have done that to try to find girls.
What I do is I get the census reports. I see there's only 10 men in Anchorage, Alaska. So I go up there. I wait for them.
This one is just as creepy. Read the obituaries to find eligible widowers.
Listen here, baby. My heart's going to tick way longer than that boy's head. You feel me?
Take up golf. Go to different golf courses. A lot of men in golf courses, so you could probably meet a
That's decent. Okay. Right.
Take several short vacations at different places rather than one long one at one place. So I guess that just means
it just sounds like a probability item, not really a plan.
Well, then number nine is a good one. Sit on a park bench and feed the pigeons. What?
Girl, you look sexy feeding them pigeons. What's that, whole wheat bread you giving them? Ah, you good to them pigeons. Daddy-like.
So you got to remember when this was coming out, this was like during the Cold War. this was – Elvis was at the height of his popularity. So 129 ways to get a husband. Another one would be take a bicycle trip through Europe. I guess you can meet a man that way.
That might not be the greatest during the war, though.
Get a job in a medical, dental, or law school. So the old, hey, I'm here to take care of you and check your vitals.
Hey, Chico D, you know, you come here to do the man's work? Oh.
Become a nurse or an airline stewardess. They have very high marriage rates.
Busy is a nurse.
Yep.
It checks out.
Maybe she read this article before pursuing that career. It worked.
She was going to retire, then she saw the pearls, Scotty.
Ask your friends' husbands who the eligible men are in their offices. So, you know, see who's... these around. I like this one. Be nice to everybody. They may have an eligible brother or son.
God, I want to call this guy an SOB, but man, I need a man in my life.
I like this one. Get lost at football games. Get lost at football games.
You just see him at the 700 level at the Philadelphia Eagles game.
How 1950s is this one? Learn to paint, set up an easel outside an engineering school.
That's very, very specific. Like.
Yeah, and obviously no women are coming out of that engineering school, only the smart-brained men.
It's weird. Every time we leave class, there's eight women painting for some reason outside. God, the 1950s are weird.
So there's a bunch more, but I want to go to the next category. Was how to let him know you're there. So how to let him know you're there. Stumble when you walk into a room that he's in. It was interesting. My ex used to stumble into the room for the guy she was looking for too. Forget discretion every once in a while and call him up.
Oh,
now Berlo,
that's so risque. I don't know, Scott.
Berlo,
the girls think.
Number 33. You know, this really gets a husband. Carry a hat box.
I don't recall many conversations starting with hats.
Yep.
I got to be honest.
Well, then maybe you'll sympathize with 34. Wear a Band-Aid. People are always ask what happened.
Well, that's not necessarily true. If you recall when I scratched half my face off of my shower door, nobody asked me at work, so.
Number 35, make a lot of money. Just choose to do that.
I mean, who needs personality?
I like this one. Learn several funny stories and learn to tell them well, but make sure you don't tell them to him more than once.
Damn, just pointed her in her spot.
This reminds me of an Always Sunny where they're like learning how to group date. And they're like, no jokes about, you know, they're not allowed to tell jokes about certain things. And then they're trying to get Charlie to say that he's a, well, it's two episodes, but the one where they get Charlie to date, he's like, you're a philanthropist. And he's like, I'm a full-on rapist.
One of the best episodes ever.
Yeah. Dropping the handkerchief still works.
Wow. In the 50s, that's still a thing?
Have your father buy some theater tickets that have to be getting got rid of. So, you know, like, oh, I got these tickets. I got to get rid of them. You want to go with me? You know? Stand in a corner and cry softly. Chances are good that he'll come over to find out what's wrong. God.
That girl's sobbing every weekend here at happy hour. Somebody better get her a man fast.
If you're at a resort, have the bellboy page you.
So I hear her name and I'm going to...
I guess so.
Be like, that sounds hot.
Oh, here's a good one. Buy a convertible. Men like to ride in them.
Seems kind of a generic. Why don't you buy a tank? Men like to drive that, too.
Learn how to bake tasty apple pies. Bring one in the office and let the eligible bachelors taste it.
No, Jim, you're married. No, Boosie.
How amazingly sexist is this?
Yeah. The dude who wrote it did not see Me Too coming around anytime soon. I got to be honest.
You know, laugh at his jokes. Guy loves when someone laughs at his jokes.
That's why you're engaged.
Yeah. Oh! Exactly. This one's one of my favorites. Accidentally have your purse fly open, scattering its contents all over the street.
Women are just chucking purses into an interstate, praying to get a man's attention. Good girl.
I need a husband.
Yeah, but I'm not going to get on US 1 to get your stuff, baby. I'm sorry.
All right, well, let's shift categories to how to look good to him. This is how you look good. Men like to think they're authorities on perfume. Ask his advice on what kind you should wear.
I'd probably say some.
This might be my favorite. Practice your drinking with your women friends first.
That's pretty big nowadays and all. And mimosas.
Guys, we got to learn how to behave. Let's get messed up and figure this out.
Cheryl, I need a man. Come over with a bottle of Jack. Stat.
Here's some great things for the lady listeners. If you dye your hair, pick a shade and stick to it. Wear high heels most of the time. They're sexier. Unless he happens to be shorter than you. And you don't want to be taller than your man.
No. You got to be careful when you're jogging those things.
Oh, how about take good care of your health? Men don't like girls who are ill.
Girl, you got the flu? You going to stay single.
Mike, if you look good in sweaters, wear one on every third date. Every third date, wear that sweater.
Even if it's July, put that stuff on. Sweat your ass off in that fine, tight sweater of yours, baby.
Let me just read off I'm going to go rapid fire of these. And listen how insanely sexist these get. Okay, here we go. Get a sunburn. Watch your vocabulary. Go on a diet if you need to. When you're with them, order your steak rare. Don't tell them about your allergies. European women use their eyes to good advantage. Practice in front of the mirror. Buy a full-length mirror and take a good look before you go to greet him. Change the shade of your stockings and be sure to keep the seam straight. Get that fresh scrub look by scrubbing. If he bought you any trinket or accessory, wear it. Use the ashtray. Don't crush out cigarettes and coffee cups. Polish up on making introductions. Don't be too fussy. Stick to your moral standards. Don't whine. Girls who whine, stay on the vine.
Yep. That still sits true. Keep that one in mind. Keep that in rotation.
It goes on to how to land him. Send his mother a birthday card. Buy his sister's children a present. If he's a fisherman, learn to scale and clean fish. Learn to sew and
some desperate woman in a canoe swimming over. And I got this. Just swinging a knife in the air.
learn to sew and wear something you made yourself.
Okay.
Let's see. Resist the urge to make him over before marriage, that is. So you don't want to give him a makeover, but once he's married, then you're allowed to just...
Yeah, don't give him lip. That's sound advice. Yeah,
don't tell dirty stories.
No.
Learn to play poker. And then he goes on to wild ideas, like go to Yale, get a hunting license. If your mother is fat, tell him you take after your father. If he's fat too, tell him you're adopted.
Disown your entire family just to get yourself a good man.
Don't marry him if he has too many loose buttons. Don't marry him. If you see a man with a flat, offer to fix it. Make and sell toupees. Bald men are easy catches.
I feel like you're making some of these up.
You know what? I wish I was. I wish that I was clever enough to make some of these up.
Always eat grapefruit.
yeah, brother, so just in case you wanted to ever, like, you know, if there's a woman that you guys are friends with that really needs a husband, you can let her know there's 129 ways to get a husband.
Tell your friends that you like spaceships.
Oh, this might be my favorite. Be friendly to ugly men. Can you imagine someone wrote this right now? What would happen to them in the media?
I pray for it.
Me too.
If somebody out there would like to make a new list, us at Verbal Shenanigans will fully support you and broadcast your list to everybody.
This
on
is true.
All of our networks.
This is true. We will definitely read your list, and maybe we'll tweet your list out. So definitely let us know your 129 ways to get a husband.
Yeah. Always keep a packet of mayonnaise in your purse.
Men love mayo and never have it on them. So, Berlo, that's
make not... sure you make good choices in dental floss.
So, yeah. What do you got, Berlo?
Yeah. Whistle reggae songs.
Whistle reggae songs. Okay. All right.
Yeah. You never know when a Jamaican single guy comes around. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you got?
Believe in a flat earth. I get one thing I didn't bring up before the holidays and everything. Something interesting. I was driving with Izzy the one day, and we were going to the local grocery store, and I saw a guy walking in like a ditch on the side of the road. And as I passed him, I looked at the guy, and I turned to Izzy. I'm like, did I just see a pirate walking down our street? A pirate, yeah. The guy had like a striped shirt. He had some kind of hat on.
Hmm.
And he was just walking down the street, and she kept on telling me, no, we've seen this guy before. I've never seen a pirate in her neighborhood before. And she's like, no, it's the guy that goes to her grocery store. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then a couple days ago, I seen this guy, and he actually dressed up like a cowboy in the Kroger. He's got like a cowboy hat on. And I do remember seeing him from time to time. He has different like slogans, like pinned up. He doesn't have like a real good cowboy hat. He's got one of those that you get for like $10 at like a Target or something like that. So right. Like a white kind of hat, and it will be like different things. Like during the football season, he'll pin up like a Falcons emblem on his cowboy hat.
Oh.
And he'll be wearing like a seersucker suit. And it's
beautiful.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of a weird thing how I go from he changes from cowboys to pirates from the time of day.
So, and now you've seen this guy just the one time, or
I've actually seen him before until Izzy finally made me realize it was the same guy. He always hangs out at our local Kroger, which is like our food store, or kind of like the A&P or.
Right.
ShopRite from Jersey.
Yep.
He's there, like, in the front every day. He's, like, in that the little area where you got carts that come in with the entrance and the exit. He's always hanging out there every single day. And he doesn't seem to work there. Well, he doesn't seem to do anything, but he spends his entire day there.
So what week are we interviewing him again?
I haven't talked to him yet. I think
you need to go. Yeah, I think you need to break the ice with this man. I think you need to be like, "Hey, how you doing?" Or, you know, like if he's wearing the cowboy hat, be like, "Howdy." You know, if he if he's wearing the pirate costume, just be like, "Arr," and see what his reaction is to you.
I mean, do you feel he's verbal shenanigans worthy?
I mean, who really is when it comes down to it? But we can make exceptions every once in a while.
That is true. But it was something that it's weird how it just stuck in my head for the longest time. It like weirded me out. Like we actually drove for like 10 minutes. I'm still like, I can't believe, what? Are you sure we know that pirate? And she's like, yeah, it's not a pirate, but we know the guy from the store. It's just something that kind of just stuck in my head. And I couldn't let it go. It was the weirdest little item.
It'd be great if your wife was like beating around the bush and you found out that was like her ex-boyfriend. Like,
are you doing down here?
Yeah. Like, we know him. Yeah. And then, like, they'd run into each other, like, oh, hey, Izzy, how you been? Oh, good.
Told you not to talk to me.
It's been a couple years since I last saw you. How you been?
I know. We were at the costume party. I know you're trying to relive stuff, but no. And then we're not going to make it happen.
And then it'd be great if it found out that he dumped her.
I just driving the car one day and see Izzy with the pirate in the ditch and all. Damn you! Damn you, ditch pirate!
Wasn't there like a Seinfeld episode back in the day? Where Jerry's dating Newman's ex and he finds out that he dumped her, and she's like super hot, and he's like, "What, Newman?" You know, but yeah. So maybe that'll happen for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was just something that really stuck in my mind and all. But
well, follow up on the pirate.
I think we're gonna have to. Now, one other thing, kind of a conversation point and on. I've been trying to convince her I want to rent out the house as like a Airbnb for like the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And I think this would be like the easiest way to get like a few $1,000.
Murdered? She's...
No.
Oh.
That's the other plan. We're talking about plan A.
Right.
Yeah.
So first, how far are you from the stadium?
I would say 35, 40 minutes.
Okay. That's not bad. Have you looked at the prices of what's going for, like what the other places are going for around the stadium at that time?
Well, I mean, I kind of brought it up. I haven't researched it, but basically it kind of hits on me that it's like immediately shut down versus we can investigate this kind of deals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like the overshadowing. They're going to destroy our house. It's like, these Airbnbs rent out houses all the time.
Yeah,
like
I don't,
the percentages of situations are limited.
Well, not only that, they, you know, I think there is some kind of like fees and stuff like that if they do mess up things. Like there's like almost like an insurance kind of thing that they assign. I've stayed at a few Airbnbs and we've never like been like let's destroy this place. You know, like I think a lot of people Airbnb is so frequent that it's. But if anything, I know for sure that it's kind of like, you know, like Uber or whatever, where you rank, you know, you have like a ranking and stuff like that. And you don't want to lose your ability to get a place somewhere else. But what would you do though? Would you go to a hotel?
My brothers, my parents aren't at their place. I can see if I can stay there for a couple days or whatever, because it would be renting it out for the week.
I see.
The only thing we would have to do is, I mean, the dog can come with us. We'd have to figure out something for the cat, but...
Even the Airbnb I stayed at, there was a cat there.
Like, what's that?
When I stayed there, I remember one Airbnb I stayed for the We stayed at a bachelor party. The cat was just there. He just...
They just left it there?
Yep. They were just like, closed doors. Cat is is around. But, so maybe the cat would be fine.
All right, so...
You should, what you should do, what you should do is say the cat's around and then go crazy that the cat that is missing his tail after they stay there.
Longing!
What did you guys do to my cat?
I actually, last night we had to hold down the cat. She's been stinking like crap for the last few weeks. We found she had like a big... turd just stuck in her hair and all. It's been there for like 2 weeks. And it was like awful situation. Like, I'm holding on to the cat for dear life because she's freaking out. And Izzy's got the scissors. And I'm like, all right, make sure you got nothing but fur, right? She's like, I got nothing but fur. I'm like, this is going to be really hard to talk to the vet about if you don't have nothing but fur.
When there's a chunk missing out of the cat.
It's by her butthole. I mean, she's fine right now. I mean, she was just freaking out, but like I had to like hold on to her for dear life because I think, like I said, about 2 weeks ago it started. Like I would come downstairs and it would just, I'm just like, oh, what? I'm figuring at first she had like gas and all, but it wouldn't go away.
So it was just like a turd like hanging off her ass?
Yeah, I mean, like I had some cloths and I cleaned some off, but then she kept crying because something, she had some crusted in her.
Oh.
So I'm like, all right, that's about as best we can do, but it just kept getting worse and all. And then like last night I came down here and like, as I'm stepping down the stairs, I could smell it. I'm like, oh, I can't handle this. This is my room. And she's like, Izzy was even like, oh, you shouldn't bitch or whatever. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to take the cat and bring it up to your Disney room and see how this works and all. And then she starts panicking that I was serious about it. and then it got to the point, it's like we tried to get a groomer and she won't be available for like another 6 days or whatever. So it's just like, all right, let me get the scissors. And she just had to like investigate around and like literally it was like a full on piece of crap.
Ew.
Stuck in her system.
It was just hanging on the fur on the back?
Yeah, it got like, she's a messy cat to begin with. Like even the previous owner says she's just messy. Like if you see her litter box, it is just all parched apart, and there have been times I've had to take the scooper and pick like piece off the floor and put it into her box. And I mean, I don't know if it has anything to do, and all joking aside, with the fact that she does have a tail, if there's something
right
that kind of like pushes turds down for cats. I mean, this is something we should have asked the dude from Catsbury.
But
I mean, we had to literally like cut a chunk of fur out of her and all. So her kind of, her butthole's a little more exposed than usual. It was the fur covering up that sensitive part.
Wow. Lucky you, pal. Like, I'm really really jealous that I don't have a cat to do that to.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can ship her down to you.
No,
let me see if I can get...
I'm good.
There you go.
Thank you. Currently, Mike... For those of you who don't know, we have the video chat on. Usually it works well when we have guests, so we know who's asking questions. But Mike just picked up his cat and just showed me the cat's asshole, butthole, right in the beautiful camera. Thank you, Mike, for that.
Yeah, I figure this is like, we had the bird box challenge. I think that's the next thing. The cat butthole challenge.
All right, well, why don't you start that on your page, and then we'll see if it takes off.
I feel like all these young kids and all just be like, come up to, you know, you go to school, it's like, oh, I don't think this math problem's right. Can you look at it? And then your friend looks at it, and it's a picture of your cat's butthole.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
I think that's something that can really catch on.
All right, well, why don't you start it at the high schools then?
Yeah. Well, they don't allow me in there for some reason. But
Mr. Anderson, there's a man in here showing his cat butthole pictures. I don't know who he is.
You got C-butted.
C-butted. No. Okay.
It's got to be a catchy name, Scott, if we want the kids to get into it.
Naturally. Naturally.
I mean, we're on internet radio now, so we... Now, when this goes worldwide, I mean,
yeah,
we got to make sure we have all the things in line, the T-shirts.
We're on internet radio now. After this episode, we're back. We're back to just this.
Sorry, everybody. Now we got to pass around cassettes of our podcast. The internet won't let us back.
The West is exploding with cat butt pictures. It's this big trend in the West Coast. Can't figure out why. I guess they were all listening to the DCN network, and Mike was telling them they loved his idea.
Yeah, really big in South Dakota, Scott. It just started.
Well, I guess on that note, I guess it's time to get out of here.
Really? You just want to end on that note?
Yep. I want to end on the cat butt. I want to end on the cat butt. I had something else, but I'll save it till next week. Not a big deal. Berlew. Anything you want to promote this week?
I will promote a friend's business, Clear CPR Training. It's a mobile CPR AED BLS training and certification in the Poconos, Lehigh Valley, New Jersey, New York, and surrounding areas, teaching the American Heart Association and the American Red Cross curriculum to people. And all, if you're interested in getting your business, have people train into this, just check them out. You can email them at training@clearcpr.com or call them at 570-421-4277.
All right. And I'm going to promote the upcoming Verbal Shenanigans comedy show at Tap House 15 on the 31st of January with headliner Tracy Locke. Absolutely hilarious. It's free to come. There's still seats available. All it is a two-item minimum, so you are getting a ridiculous show for absolutely nothing. So come on down to that. Yeah, and check us out on these different platforms we got coming up. I know Coming Right Up Network is not out yet, but within like 2 weeks or so, we should be up on that. Check out DCN, check out Stitcher, check out iTunes, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and hit us up. Tell us what you want to hear.
Send us a picture of your cat's anus on Instagram.
Yeah. So if you send us a picture of your cat's anus, you get a free T-shirt. So
absolutely.
Yep.
This is the new trend. We are dead serious.
Yeah. Well, I would definitely give you a shirt if you send me a picture of your cat's butt. Berlew, did you learn anything on today's show?
I learned that it's hard in life to figure out what a pirate's doing in a ditch.
Right.
Yeah. I learned that no matter how much you hate Tom Brady, he will destroy you and everybody that you love.
Yeah.
And I learned that interviews are way better when my voice is in them.
Well,
so make sure to add me back in.
Well, yeah, like I said, the magic of editing—you'll be in the recut version. But guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back, and make sure to give us a follow and check out some of our old episodes too, because they are awesome. Before we go, speaking of cats, I gotta promote this. Last week we had DJ Bornstein of the Catsbury Park Cat Convention on, and it turns out I will be doing comedy at the Cat Convention. I also bring in a bunch of funny comics with me. So April 13th down in Asbury Park, come see comedy at the Wonder Bar at the Cat Convention. So you have plenty of time. So dreams are
everybody
coming
just
true.
Start chanting C butt at Scott when he's on stage, okay?
C-Bot. C-Bot. Anyway, guys, see you later. Tune in next week. Bye.
Later. Mm-mm.